Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, fellow Hot Mess Clubhousers. I hope you're very well today. My name is Lucy Vine and I am your oft-awkward host. This is the Hot Mess Clubhouse, a podcast celebrating funny women, and this is series 2, focusing on funny writers. Hooray! I'm a little delirious about today's guest, Terry White. She's been a hero of mine throughout my entire career as a journalist, and it was a joy to have a proper conversation with her. I mean, a conversation where I didn't drunkenly stagger up to her at an event and go, "Oh my God, I think you're so amazing." Although this chat definitely has that kind of vibe, apologies. She's the editor-in-chief of Empire and Pilot TV magazine, but is also genuinely one of the most searingly honest and beautiful writers out there. If you haven't read any of her pieces about poverty and violence, do seek them out. They're incredible. She also has a book coming out in 2020 called Undone, which we didn't talk about one bit, yay me, but you should 100% put it on your pre-order list because I know for a fact it will be incredible. What we did talk about is Terry's eye-wateringly impressive journalist career, being a massive narcissist, chronic shyness, and Samantha Mumba. Be warned, we also get quite shouty about feminism, which I enjoyed immensely, and I hope you do too.
Hello. How's your day been so far?
It's been all right, actually.
Yeah, good. Excellent. Mm-hmm. So I read your Wikipedia page and you are a 71-year-old singer cum actress from California.
A jazz singer, yeah, terrywhite.com, which I once looked up because I'm a massive narcissist. I wanted to see who it belonged to, and it belongs to a jazz artist.
Amazing.
But she's had an amazing life. So she was homeless for a while.
Yeah.
She slept on a park bench and she's now this huge jazz singer.
So I think you should assume her identity.
I think we're kindred spirits.
You could age yourself up, you know, mm-hmm. lean into it. Mm-hmm. Well, before we get started properly, gonna get some snacks out, okay? Because I want to judge your snack choices.
Okay. Well, should just tell everybody that I've just eaten a massive chocolate donut.
Okay,
already.
So if you don't want any of my snacks, I'm gonna be offended. Hobnobs.
I've noticed they've not got chocolate on them.
No, well, okay, so there is a reason.
I have got you a party bag of chocolate.
Amazing.
Is that like a pick and mix?
So that's why I didn't get, no.
It's oh my more god, just actual chocolate bars!
Actual chocolate bars, and I want to know, like, what your favourite is, and okay. what is missing from
this
choice.
So we should say...
That's the posh one.
I'm not pronouncing that.
Yeah, we don't know.
Whisper Gold.
Yep.
Kit Kat Chunky.
Yep.
Smarties.
The Kitchens.
And... What else we got here? A cream egg. Right, so
okay,
if I can
rate
rank
them for
them,
me. Yep. Please do.
I would go cream egg, Kit Kat Chunky, Whisper Gold, Smarties. I don't know what that is, so I'm not going to mention
it. It's really nice, but it's a bit fancy. You know, I like my chocolate to be basic. Mm-hmm. I like my cream eggs and my Whisper Golds.
Where's the crunchy?
I'm so sorry.
Where's the twirl?
Oh, fuck, I've completely balled this up.
Where's the Twix?
Oh, I'm a failure.
Basics.
Right, snack time over. So, your Wikipedia page, can we go through it? What, everything you've done? How many times have you been an editor of a magazine? Is it five, six?
One, two, three, four, five. Do I want to say five?
Because there was Buzz, Shortlist, Time Out, Life and Style?
Life and Style.
Empire, and now, of course, Pilot Mag as well.
And
so,
Pilot.
So, it is, we are at least six, aren't we?
Yes. Yes, kind of.
Oh, and you've also launched a podcast for the Pilot TV magazine, which I listened to last night and is fucking brilliant. And everybody should stop listening to this podcast and go and listen to that podcast right now.
It's very fun. Traditionally, you launch a magazine and the print mag is kind of the focus.
Right.
And I've worked on, I think I counted up recently, it's something like 16 magazine launches, both here and in America, or relaunches. And
you're very impressive.
Well, but it's funny because...
Do you sit at home going, God, I'm impressive.
God, I'm impressive.
That's how we're opening your Wikipedia page.
Oh.
God, she's impressive. So tell me about the early life section in your Wikipedia page. Because I always find that quite weird anyway. How do you summarise, like, 17 years of very formative times into a tiny paragraph?
Did you have
a beehive back then?
I did not have a beehive. Mm. I had inferior hair, which is, I think, why I went on to develop the beehive.
The best hair. So you grew up.
I grew up.
That's that done.
I grew up on a council estate. Single mum. There were three of us. A fourth child came along later. Yeah. And I've written quite a bit about this, actually, because I grew up in quite extreme poverty, mm-hmm. in a single-parent family, mm-hmm. And there was quite a lot of violence, mm-hmm. in our household growing up. My mum was married a few times and didn't always have the best taste in other human beings. We spent some time in a women's refuge, mm-hmm. Which I've also written about. I think it's what led me to magazines.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you, because you've as you say, you've written about coming from this working class background and everything. How did you then end up in an industry full of rich wankers?
I asked myself that daily.
How did that come about? Tell me about it.
Well, so I was a weird child. I had a stutter for a long time. Aww. I was chronically shy. I had no mates. I was telling my boyfriend the other day that, did you see that thing on Twitter that was what was the most on-brand story from your childhood, right? I didn't tweet this, but mine was that when I was 7, I went up to my teacher and said, excuse me, I'm not feeling challenged enough by the work at the moment. And I've been told that we're not allowed homework until we're 10, but I'd really like it now. And the teacher said, well, I can't just set it for you, I'd have to set it for the entire class. And I went, that's fine. So... the whole class got set homework.
I'm unsurprised that you had no friends, Terry.
But the whole class got set homework, and that definitely didn't help me get any friends.
No, not even in the teacher. The teacher would have been fucking livid about having to go up with that thing.
But I'll tell you what it was. I was quite a lonely child growing up, and always felt like an outsider, always felt like a weirdo.
Were you close to your siblings, though?
No, kind of on and off. Me and my brother and my sister are very close now.
Yeah.
Growing up, because, you know, when life is hard, the tension's in the house, won't grow.
And you often take it out on the people you do love and care about, yeah.
Yeah, but I was always close to my brother. But I loved magazines because I remember always wanting to buy Just 17. I babysat from the age of 9, which I think must be illegal.
Yes, definitely.
And I would
your siblings rather than
other people's kids.
Oh, really?
Kids. Yeah, babies. Like 9 years old, definitely not right. And I would take my babysitting money and I would buy Just 17. I'd wait outside the shop before it opened. And for me, it was a community that I could be part of, a friendship gang that I couldn't have in real life, but actually I could have through the pages of a magazine.
Amazing.
And that's where my love of magazines came from. So I've always been driven by being part of that gang and being part of that club and being part of that community and wanting to create that for other people.
But how did you get into that gang then? Did you go to uni?
Yes, so I was the first person in my family to go to university, which was interesting, actually.
Where did you go?
I went to Leicester and I did English literature.
So did you do like 2 hours a week like I did?
I did 8 hours a week. And let me say, and this is the other on-brand thing about me. I used to get up at 7 a.m, go and sit in the library until 10 p.m. at night, just studying like a psychopath, because that's what I'm like.
That's so impressive.
Well, I saw it as my way out of, I didn't want to have to go home.
But you're so driven. I don't know how you've got this motivation. You're able to push yourself in this way. It's so impressive.
Well, there's a story, I've told it once before, and it was that when I'd done my last exam at university, and it was before I graduated, and I went home, and I wasn't going home very much at this point, I wasn't very close to my family, and my mum said to me, I'd applied for these magazine jobs, and my mum said, oh, you know, you're not going to get one of those magazine jobs, and she brought home a drive-through McDonald's application form and said, fill that in, don't think you're sitting on your ass waiting for one of these jobs to come up.
Right.
And I'd actually gone for an interview on Later magazine, which was being edited by Phil Hilton.
Wow.
Who's now editorial director of Shortlist and Stylisting, is my mentor. And I called him desperately over and over and over again, left him loads of messages. And it was for a secretary, his PA and an editorial assistant, which I was wildly overqualified for, but I didn't care. I just wanted to get in there.
Anyway, in, isn't it? That's what I started doing. Yeah, yeah. And so even though you... So you harassed him into giving you a job, essentially, didn't you?
He did say years later, so I went on to edit Shortlist, and he said in my leaving speech, he remembered the voicemails and he'd never heard the desperation in somebody's voice.
Wow.
Which was both touching and like...
I was going to say, he's not sure if it's a compliment. Yeah. So do you remember that moment when you got that first job then?
Yes, and I remember Samantha Mumba was playing in the background.
Oh my God, I'm Samantha Mumba.
And whenever I hear Samantha Mumba, which isn't often these days, I remember it, and I remember being in... the front room and just thinking, this is it, this is when everything's going to start for me.
And it did. But you have sort of almost entirely worked with men.
Yes.
Have you found that you have to work, you know, 10 times harder or whatever to be taken seriously in that world?
Yeah, and I think that's part of my psychological makeup, actually, is that I enjoy the challenge of being the underdog and people presuming I'm not up to it. Part of me, I've never understood that until recently.
No.
And I think it's definitely part of what drives me and then frustrates me, but then keeps driving me.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I've worked with a lot of men, some incredibly talented men.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I've worked with women as well, and there are definite differences. And I kind of hate the stereotype that about women being kind of bitchy and difficult.
Exactly,
and competitive.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I want all my female friends to fail miserably, but no.
Yes. That's natural. But I think I actually found men were less competitive. I think we are, as women, we are trained to see each other as competition from the moment we're born.
Well, it's that awful, like, pulling the ladder up behind you thing, isn't it? Yeah.
And
I never found that with you, because when, I mean, I was a young journalist, you were still a young journalist too, but you were... more senior than I was, and a couple of times I met you as a journalist, you were so generous with your advice, and just generally I just got that feeling that you are happy to help other women, and that's just such an important and lovely thing.
I think it's really important. I've had some amazing female mentors and male mentors, and without them I wouldn't have had the career I've had.
So was there a point at which you felt like, okay, I'm here and this is now my career, I am a writer and I'm good at what I do?
Yeah, it took years, though. The fear was there for years and years and years. Every job I had, I was convinced I was going to get fired. Like, convinced. Not just, like, a fleeting
thought.
Going to
get caught out.
Yeah. And I think people talk a lot about imposter syndrome, and I think it is that, but I think it's also fundamentally, we are taught as women to question ourselves and be self-critical a lot more than men are, generally speaking, and I think we're harder on ourselves anyway. And I also think business is not set up to validate women. I think the metrics used for success, the metrics used for reward, are not necessarily the metrics that reflect the work that women often do. And I think it took me years, and now... I know my ability, yeah. I know that I'm good, I know that I'm, you know, I've worked my arse off, and those things are kind of facts to me now, but
yeah.
I've been doing this 19 years,
yeah.
And it's taken me 19 years to get to a position of going, I'm really fucking good, I'm a really fucking good editor, I'm a really good editor, and you can always get better and you can always improve. I wish I could go back in time and speak to 25-year-old me and go, just relax, enjoy it.
You're really good, you'll be fine, they'll be throwing the promotions at you. I wanted to ask you about moving to New York to do time out, because that must have felt like a massive thing. Never mind taking on the editorship of a magazine, but to actually completely change your life and move away.
Yeah.
Did you think twice, or was it like, oh my God, no?
I wish I could say I did. I'm quite impulsive. I'm quite impulsive in that if something really excites me, I don't really care about the practicalities. So I got offered a job initially on a magazine called Life and Style out there. And it meant at 32, completely uprooting my life, I knew one person in New York. And I loved the city, but that was it. And I ended up then moving to Time Out New York. And I was there 3.5 years in total. I probably should have thought a little bit more about it, because I had an amazing circle of friends here. I was close to my family. I had a really comfortable life. And there's another part of me psychologically that always kind of wants to append it when I get too comfortable because I'm too safe and too secure. And New York was both amazing and awful and challenging. And, I, you know, as an experience, it's kind of, I don't regret it necessarily, but I went into it very lightly.
So, but you prefer being here and you're happy to be back?
I do. And I think, you know, I love adventure, so I would never rule out living in another country. I spent quite a bit of time in LA, which I really love. Yeah. I've often thought about just, like, going to Europe for a bit. Probably not these days, you know, what with
probably not allowed.
What with the lack of being able
by the time this comes out, you won't be able to.
But I'm all for adventure and I'm all for being challenged. I hate feeling bored. I hate feeling stuck. I hate feeling like everything's too safe and too happy and too... That sounds really dumb.
But I think if you're self-aware enough to understand that you are a bit of a self-sabotager or what you need to kind of keep you stimulated, I think that's fine.
That's fine, right?
It's fine to indulge your darker impulses as long as you know you're doing
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
So this is where we're going to take a little break from the actual interview to do, I keep doing this stupid joke, my casual fire round,
okay.
Which is like a quick fire round, but it's a bit more laid back.
I'm all up for it.
I've got to probably cut that joke out because I can't keep explaining it because it's not even funny. I'm so sorry. So basically, quick fire quiz, but you feel free to take your time.
Okay. Ready?
Yes. Okay, so how many marks out of 10 would you give your first snog?
Oh, God, it was up a tree. 4.
Up a tree?
It's up a tree.
How could it be up a tree?
We did it up a tree in the park in town. Oh, God, it was awful. 4.
4. Okay, yeah. Great.
Pretty sure he drove me once in a taxi when I went home as well, like,
oh my God,
25 years
and
later.
And you didn't say
I didn't say
tree?
Remember the tree.
What kind of tree was it?
A big one. Like a massive
tree. That's not specific.
I don't know.
It was a big tree.
Breeds of tree.
You live in London, you don't know trees.
No.
Is love good or bad?
Good.
Okay.
Love is the answer.
Fuck you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Yeah, love is the answer.
How would you describe your sense of humour?
Weird.
Weird in what way?
Just, like, I say things I shouldn't say and make jokes I shouldn't make.
And I think you're quite dark, aren't you?
Yeah, and I say things that I find funny and nobody else in the room does. Or I say,
as long as you're making yourself laugh.
That's what I say. And, or I say things grounded in proper dark reality and then just make put a punchline on the end and think that makes them a joke, but I don't think it does.
What are your top three supermarkets?
Oh my God, Booths. Have you been to
what?
Booths? It's Northern.
Oh, okay, right.
Booths.
I don't go north.
It's, oh my God, it's worth going north for. It's a local supermarket. All local produce, so fancy. I love it. I've only discovered it.
Is it like Whole Foods? Because I hadn't realised Whole Foods was a thing. And when I went to America, I went in this Whole Foods and I was like, oh my God,
It's like local Whole Foods. It's like village Whole Foods.
That sounds amazing. So that's number one.
That's number one. Morrison's is number two, but with a marketplace. So there are some rough Morrison's.
Yeah.
And there are some nice Morrison's. Okay. I like the nice Morrison's.
Okay, good. How do you know if it's a nice Morrison's from the outside?
It's got a marketplace.
Okay, oh, it actually says.
Yeah.
Oh, I see, okay.
And they've got a chicken counter that's working, not just
the chickens with carcasses. Okay, all right, right, fair enough. And number three?
Lidl.
Interesting. Any particular reason?
Cheap.
Good point. Great. When was the last time you stared out of a window at the rain and pretended to be in a movie?
Not for years, actually. I went through a phase in my late 20s when I was in a terrible relationship, and
It's nothing like a horrible relationship to make you stare out
a window, right? And right. I used to drink Bell's whiskey, like Taggart.
This is like a movie. Your whole life is like the opening of a movie. You're so on message, aren't you, Terry?
And I would stare out my window. I lived in Angel in a top floor flat, and I would stare out my window in the rain, drinking my Bell's whiskey, crying over this terrible man.
Oh, that's so evocative.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry about the bad reading. I'm laughing and making it into a joke.
That's fine.
Sorry.
The whole thing was a joke, really.
So it's depressing when you look back at these things. Hi, man.
I'm Martin.
What's his home address? Did you have a moment in your life when you were like, oh, feminism, I get it, I'm a feminist?
I think I've always been a feminist. I did, actually, my dissertation was in Black Feminist Theory. Because I loved Toni Morrison and Audre Lorde. I think I've grown to understand intersectional feminism better. So I think white women, including myself, bandy it around a lot. And we say intersectional feminism without understanding what it means, which is obviously, it's not just enough for white women to succeed without us all succeeding, and without us as white women recognising our privilege, realising that there's a massive intersection with race and with religion and with class, and that all these things exist in addition to being a woman, and just being a woman kind of doesn't give you any particular kind of, you know, ownership over feminism. And I think I've been educated a lot over the last few years on that. But, you know, as the child of a single mother who grew up, you know, if you didn't do it for yourself, then it didn't get done. And it's never been an option for me.
So you did come to it quite early then. I feel like a lot of women my age, or our age, didn't get to it or certainly sort of rejected it. There was definitely a sort of 90s phase where everybody kind of went like, oh, don't need feminism anymore. Like, and it's definitely become okay and cool even to be a feminist again in the last sort of 5-10 years. But
I do remember.
You were already there. You were ahead of the curve.
Well, I remember thinking, since when has feminism been this dirty thing? There were women I respected who would say to me, oh, God, I'm not a feminist.
Yeah, but it was a really depressing time when people didn't... Well, still, moving back to the countryside, I've fucking meeting a lot of these people who are like, feminism, oh, you just want to kill all men. And I do want to kill all men, but it's a completely separate issue, okay? It's nothing to do with my feminism.
You know, when people say to me, it really angers me, because when people say we don't need feminism anymore, that is the exact epitome and verbalisation of privilege. Because the reality is, if you think 2 women a week being murdered by their partner or their ex-partner, which is an epidemic of women being killed, has nothing to do with feminism, then you are out of your mind. Yeah. That actually systemic and structural misogyny is absolutely at the heart of the domestic violence stats. So everything, every single way in which a woman struggles, whether it's career, mm-hmm. whether it's pay, whether it's violence, whether it's sexual violence, all of these things are about the kind of system of patriarchy and how feminism intersects with that. And so the thought that we don't need it, just because you personally don't feel you need it, and by the way, you're going to be wrong anyway, does not make it redundant. It makes you incredibly lucky and incredibly privileged.
Oh, I'm going to cry. But yeah, just to add that, I mean, obviously, there's just so many examples of why we still need feminism. But also, like, when I've had arguments on Twitter with Piers Morgan, for example, and he's saying we don't need feminism, we've got a female prime minister, we've got a female head of police, all of his terrible, shitty arguments that he comes up with. He obviously reads every tweet that gets sent to him, because, like, when I've had arguments with him, it's been from 12 hours before, and there's hundreds and hundreds of tweets between that. So he scrolled down and he's seen my tweet, then responded to it, and then started an argument, etc. And then I have spent the next sort of 2 or 3 days getting sent
really, really shitty things from men being like, oh, get back to the kitchen, you need a husband, clearly you need to be like
shagged. It's normally the one, exactly. Right.
I was about to say fucked and then it's a man walked in. We're at Waterstones Gower Street, people are gonna wander in. There's gonna be a lift. Anyway, but yeah, so and the fact that he pretends that we don't need that anymore and yet obviously sees those kind of responses constantly.
Well, here's the thing, right? Here's the thing, I think he fundamentally, and I refuse to mention him on Twitter because it's
shouldn't give him any attention.
It's exactly the fuel he wants, but I hadn't even added him. No, he searched his own name up.
Yeah.
I think he fundamentally doesn't believe a lot of what he says. I think a lot of it is about clickbait, it's about attention, it's about making himself relevant.
He saw Katie Hopkins male hole, didn't he? Yeah,
and I think I get a lot sometimes. Sometimes I get tweets about, especially when I'm talking about domestic violence, I get messages about men's rights and what about men and all of this. And, you know, we have such a long way to go. The thought that we don't need it anymore, we're talking about equality. That's what we're talking about. And we are so far away from it on every single level. It's astonishing to me. In many respects, we've gone backwards on stuff.
Yeah.
And this is not going to be a fight that we win within our generation, within the next generation. It fundamentally goes back to the very fundamental structure of society, how society's been made. And some women having power doesn't have anything to do with feminism. Theresa May is a terrible feminist. She has a terrible record against women.
Oh, and God.
The fact that she is a woman is neither near here nor there.
Absolutely.
And one woman becoming successful in one particular way does not in any way eradicate a need for all women.
She also wasn't even voted in. She was brought to power in a very weird roundabout way. It's not like we even voted for a female prime minister.
No.
It's so
depressing. People say about Thatcher, and Thatcher famously had voice lessons to sound more like a man because she felt like she wouldn't be given respect if she sounded like a woman.
It's so dark.
You know, there are so many conditions under which women are allowed to be successful within a male framework. That is not feminism.
Absolutely. Oh, you voice it so well. I was going to ask if editing a film magazine, is that anything like the sort of, because you hear a lot about the gamers world, which is so vitriolic about, you know, any females in their industry sort of thing. Have you been attacked much by the manosphere or anything?
No, but I tell you what, there's been a couple of instances. One, somebody, we had some sharks sent into the Empire office.
They're sharks?
Stuffed sharks.
Okay, not living sharks.
To promote the film The Meg. And
oh, amazing!
We climbed inside them and we were taking pictures of us all being eaten, and the social media guy at Empire tweeted a picture of me dead, being like, oh, she's been attacked by a thing. And I say feminist in my Twitter bio, and somebody replied and said, oh, one less feminist in the world, blah, 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 that's all we need. But it does, there are moments and there are fandoms where it does become an issue. So Helen O'Hara, who is the contributing editor of Empire, she's one of the journalists. And she tweeted something about Batman vs Superman, one of the DC films. And she spent the next week essentially fielding toxic tweets, some of which were just toxic about the film, some of which were really sexist. And I think there is a layer where people will engage with you just as another human, and then when that doesn't work, they reach for the next thing, which is your gender. I do think that, I think film's interesting. I think gender's still an issue across the board, really, when you look at the stats for female filmmakers, for studio execs, for who's making films, female narrative-led films. We still have a massive issue, really.
Way to go, yeah.
And I am conscious that, you know, both myself and the editor of Total Film are both women,
right,
which has never happened before.
Wonderful, by the way.
But we're still the exceptions, not the rules.
Yeah, of course.
And I've worked really hard at Empire to bring more women in. And we're now working quite hard on making sure our writing pool is much more diverse, because it traditionally hasn't been what I feel is diverse enough. But film has, again, it's a microcosm of society. So all of the problems we see in society are reflected in film. And I think every industry has its own set of problems. And I think gender is one in film. But actually, I think, again, class is an issue in terms of accessibility and diversity in terms of the default story not being the story of the white man.
Yeah, yeah. You just put it all so fucking well. I mean, I read your incredible piece for Medium last week, His Boots and Other Stories, and I was honestly crying within about three lines. So you've been at Empire a few years now, right? Is Empire your favourite magazine?
It is. It'd be bad now if I said no, right?
Yeah.
I've always loved Empire. I always wanted to edit Empire. Yeah. And you know,
was it on a hit list?
It was on a very short hit list, which is now empty.
Oh my god, you're so cool!
But you know, the thing is, I'm a huge, huge fan of print media. Full stop. I think magazines are wonderful, beautiful, fascinating objects that we should all absolutely invest in value. I think every kind of media brand now is an ecosystem which contains lots of amazing things like podcasts and events and social and digital. But for me, the pull of the Empire job was always the magazine.
And it felt very exciting that you launched Pilot as well. Yeah. Like, to actually be launching a print magazine is so exciting.
Yes. It was like, wow, it feels like the noughties again. Yeah. The old Satans were around and we had like big magazine budgets to launch magazines.
Did you have Friday food?
Yeah.
Not quite there.
Not quite. Let's get carried away.
Yeah. Because I really love film, but I am actually more of a TV person. So how have you found... moving from film to TV in that way, like...
Well, it was really a solution to the kind of change we'd seen in the world. So when I came into Empire, the explosion of cinematic TV was really picking up pace. So we had, you know, Ridley Scott making The Man in the High Castle for Amazon the same year he made The Martian.
Right.
And you'd got people moving between the mediums. TV was no longer this second-rate cousin, five
so
channels.
Really weirdly. I think that Prosecco is going down in a weird way.
Five channels and, you know. So we really wanted to be able to look at that, and we looked at, should we pull it into Empire? Should we broaden out Empire? And it became really clear to me that the kind of core audience of Empire wanted to be a film magazine first and foremost. So the opportunity to launch something standalone, which, because there is so much amazing TV out there,
it feels like an absolute moment, doesn't it? Especially
it really
for female driven shows and amazing writing. It just feels like TV is really exciting.
It is, and just being able to celebrate that properly, not in a cursory way, not in a tag a few pages on, in a we are going to launch a brand that is just all about incredible cinematic telly, what you should watch, what you should skip, what you should revisit, and just kind of go and do the kind of Empire treatment of going in fully immersed in that, immersed into the detail, the craft. Yeah. We're interested in the people who made it as much as the people who were in it. And for us, there was a massive gap between, you've got the likes of the listings mags, which are amazing and sell loads and do a really functional job for a slightly older demographic, Radio Times, but nobody that was really kind of going all in on this, and we call it cinematic TV, which is just TV with the production values, writing, cast and crew of traditionally a film, really.
Yeah. Well, it is brilliant, and everybody should buy both Pilot and Empire.
Yes.
Yeah. So with being such a TV and film expert, have you ever considered writing a screenplay?
I have. I kind of have one underway at the moment. Yes.
What kind of genre? Can you tell me anything about it?
I can't.
Oh, come on.
It's linked to something else. But,
oh, really?
But
you can't even tell me an area.
Women.
I can't imagine you doing a rom-com.
No. I'll just say it's quite dark for a change.
Because I'm so into the dark telly and horror films and all that kind of stuff.
Well, and look what's happening from, in terms of, as you say, female writers, female creators. Phoebe Waller-Bridge,
who is
a one-woman wonder.
Yeah.
You've got Killing Eve, you've got Fleabag, Pure, you know, all of these things which are just either female-focused narratives, female writers and showrunners, telling female, interesting female stories. Derry Girls is back in a couple of weeks.
Oh, it just feels really exciting, doesn't it?
Yeah. It does. Proper, you know, and somebody said to me, they were like, I can't understand, like, how they managed to nail, like, the complexities of, like, Villanelle and Eve in Killing Eve. I'm like, that's what happens when you let women write women, because we know each other, we know ourselves and we know each other.
Well, yeah, and on that note... I'm going to stop rambling at you. Thank you so much. Oh, in the words of my queen, RuPaul, would you like to plug anything? Is there anything that you would like? Well, how do people follow you on social media, Terry?
I'm on Terry_White. Empire and Pilot in shops now.
Amazing. Thank you so much for joining me today, Terry. And thank you, everyone out there. Please rate and subscribe. Bye.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.